It's poverty.
It's crime.
Unemployment.
Corruption.
Accountability.
The energy crisis.
Inflation.
We are worried.
That South Africa has myriad problems on all fronts is a given. But the time has come for us to look for real solutions. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and this MoneyWeb podcast will discuss those solutions on how South Africans can solve problems by having tough conversations and drawing on the insights of South Africa's top business leaders. Welcome to Fix SA. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fix SA here on MoneyWeb. These are conversations committed to finding solutions and viable approaches to the complex and multifaceted issues facing South Africa. Today, though, the program is going to take a different turn. We're not focusing on fixing the country, but rather its economic powerhouse, Johannesburg. Now, Nicholas Bauer is a journalist and a social impact entrepreneur, and he's just written a book called Great Johannesburg, What Happened? How to Save an African Economic Giant. It's a smart, timely, and well-written book, and it has some interesting and simple solutions. And as we have this conversation, I'm going to ask you to have a think about what the city of Johannesburg means to you, particularly if you are a resident, and not only what it means to you, but what it can be. And let me start the process. When I think of Johannesburg, I think of the silhouette of the Northcliffe Water Tower at dusk on a winter's evening. I think about the smog-infused skyline that emerges on the N3 as one returns from the coast, the delights of the Radium Beer Hall, the Winter Cosmos at Delta Park, and the twin Brixton and Hillbrow Towers in a perpetual 5-kilometer-long staring contest. That's my Johannesburg. I'm sure you've got a different view. Nicholas Bauer, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us. And talking of towers, let's start with that if we can. Let's talk about Ponte. It's close to your heart. It's also a metaphor for the city. It was proud, then it was derelict, and now it's being fixed. Tell me what's happening there.
Oh, yes. Thanks very much for the opportunity, Jeremy. Good to speak to you again. Ponte is in many ways a stalking horse of the Johannesburg story. I mean, Ponte opened up its doors in the mid-70s as the creme de la creme of inner city living, when really Johannesburg was a completely different city. It was like it was on a different planet during the height of apartheid. A very weird wonderland of prosperity, and of course also European multiculturalism in the height of racial inequality in South Africa. And it, of course, in the 90s became that horror story that so many Joburgers still think it is. The first vertical urban slum in Africa, with no water, no electricity, was almost turned into a prison by the Department of Correctional Services in the early 2000s, believe it or not. And then most recently, in the past 10 to 15 years, has become a bit of an oasis for the middle class of the inner city. And I mean, South Africa's definition of middle class, I think, really cuts to the heart of our own problems with inequality and the different worlds we all inhabit. When I say middle class, that's very much inner city middle class, which means you need a pay slip and about 10,000 rand gross in your bank account every single month in order to be able to rent a flat out there. But in a nutshell, Jeremy, I went there in 2012 to cover a story. I was still working for the Mail and Guardian. And I didn't get the gangs, drugs, sex, and prostitution that Nick Dawes sent me to get, who was the editor at the time. I left with the lease to stay, and the rest, as they say, is history. We opened up a social enterprise called Lala and Jer. We've taken 25,000 people on tours through not only Ponte, but inner city Johannesburg, and really demonstrably changed the lives of hundreds of young people in that building, in that area, because we use every single cent of those tours that we earn to run two fully-fledged community centers at the bottom of Ponte Towers. So while many people still give us that shitting dog stare when we say we take people on tours of Ponte and of Hillbrow, how can that be a tourism destination? Well, we're living proof that it is. 12 years down the line and 25,000 tourists can't be that wrong. And in many ways, it was the core of the inspiration for the book, Jeremy. I mean, if you can turn around a place like Ponte, most importantly, in the minds of Joburgers, and create such beauty in what's seen as a negative space. Well, I think anything's possible. I don't know about you.
I certainly agree with you, Nick. We're going to talk about turnaround solutions in just a moment, but let me deviate for just a second. And let me ask you, as a dyed-in-the-wool Johannesburger, why you think the city is worth saving? And don't throw the economic influence at me. Give me your personal reasons for loving the city and why it's so important that we get things right here.
I think in many ways, Johannesburg is really the litmus test for whether or not we can turn South Africa around. Cape Town, I think, has already got a foothold. But is, you know, Cape Town's certainly a South African city, but is it an African city? And I think Johannesburg, in many ways, is going to be the litmus test for whether or not South Africa turns on a more positive trajectory or not. And why do I love Johannesburg? Well, I'm biased. I'm bored, bred, buttered, corrupted in Johannesburg. I grew up in Roodepoort. I still love saying I come from the West Rand, wear that badge with pride. I don't call it the West Rand, but the Best Rand. And why should we save it? Well, Johannesburg, you know, sprung up out of absolutely nothing, Jeremy. There was just Bosveld until the discovery of gold. And it, within 20 years, overtook 250-year-old Cape Town in terms of size, population, and of course, also GDP per capita. And why should we save it? Well, Johannesburg has got so many different facets to the South African story. I mean, the discovery of gold and the development of the gold industry, critically in the book, I argue that it actually led to the rise of apartheid and the implementation of apartheid when the National Party came to power in 1948. And also it was critical to the metamorphosis of South Africa into a democracy in the 90s and into the early 2000s. And it's very easy to turn around and say, ah, bugger Joburg, let's just head for the hills and let the city of gold, let whatever happens to it, let it be. But I think that it's worth saving based on not only the history, it's 145, almost 150-year-old history, but also the fact that it I think, is a bears testament to South Africa's ingenuity. I mean, one of the most basic facets of life is water, Jeremy, and we built the biggest city in the world that has no water source, that has no river, that's not near a coastline. And for it to just disintegrate into nothing, I think, would be really a capitulation into the doomsday scenario that everybody paints for South Africa. And as a true Joburger, you know, I've got the hustle bred into me. You cut my skin, I will bleed Joe Hasselberg. I think that if we can turn around Johannesburg, the rest of the country is going to be easy. So I think beyond the financial argument that the Johannesburg Stock Exchange is here, there's still billions upon billions of dollars, never mind rands, value in Johannesburg. I think it is really a challenge. The gauntlet needs to be thrown down to Joburgers and indeed the rest of South Africa that calls Joburg home, because you know, not everybody considers themselves a Joburger, and really have this challenge in front of them to turn Johannesburg around and really provide a blueprint for the rest of the country. Because I think much like other parts of South Africa, there's nothing wrong with Johannesburg that can't be fixed with what's right.
Nick, I want to pick you up on that phrase, Johannesburg. You rightly point out that this was a city that emerged from nothing and that it was through hustle and ingenuity that it finds itself where it is, certainly in the heydays. And I agree with you, something that, or it certainly is a city that can be saved. Do you think it's that quality of hustle, of energy, of sometimes even cutting corners that is ultimately going to save it, that's going to fix it?
Yeah, I believe so. I think anything at it, you know, if you want to give a definition of a Joburger is someone that hustles until something happens. And I think Joburg is really still one of those cities where if you speak to enough people, if you coalesce with like-minded Joburgers, and you will make something happen, regardless of, you know, whether or not it's creating a multinational food conglomerate like Nando's, which started with one store in Rosettenville and now has over 1,000 worldwide, whether or not it's creating an industry that produced 40% of the world's gold in the entire history of human existence. You know, 40% came out of the ground in Johannesburg. All of that gold is gone, Jeremy, but the Johannesburg story is littered with these tales of people that refuse to succumb to the naysayers. Whether or not it was the pioneers that arrived here and said, well, you know, there is absolutely nothing here, but there's a promise of a better tomorrow with this possibility that I might strike it rich with gold. It brought in so many different shades and stripes of people. And of course, also, I mean, you know, led to the very painful story of apartheid and the violence that came with it. But I mean, to answer your question more directly, there are Joburgers all around the city that are making it better every single day. And it starts with just one person. And I always try and fall back on the example of the wilds. I'm not too sure if you know of the botanical garden.
I know it well.
Borders Killarney. Mm. Yeah, Killarney, Houghton, and Hillbrow. I mean, what a mix, right? Hillbrow, Houghton, Killarney. You can't get more polarizing in terms of suburbs. And in a nutshell, there was a guy called James Delaney. He was living on the border in Killarney, and he noticed this park is just getting so overgrown, but it looks like a little winter. It was winter when he decided going there, and he said it looked like a little winter wonderland and reminded him of Lord of the Rings imagery type of thing. And he went in, and the security guard said to him, look, mate, you cannot go inside. It's too dangerous. If you sign in, I bear no responsibility for what happens to you. And to cut a very long story short, Jeremy, he went in, he walked around, he realized that there is just such a massive opportunity here to reactivate this public space. It did have its certain dodgy elements, but it didn't necessarily, you know, a lot of the dangers in Johannesburg as Joburgers, we like to build up the possibility of something bad happening. Not to say that danger isn't lurking around every corner. But if we let that dictate our thinking, I think we miss a lot of the opportunities. And James didn't allow that thinking to dictate what he did next. And soon after he decided he would go in there and begin by clearing paths and trying to make it a little bit less overgrown, he was joined by others that were also curious about going into the park. And then sooner or later, the adjoining schools of Verdine, St. John's, King Edward's, they got involved. And then before long, he had corporate sponsors, which also got involved. And you walk through the wilds today, and in a period of 10 years, he's turned this into like an oasis of absolute and a gorgeous greenery in the heart of Johannesburg. You sometimes sit in the wilds and you forget that you're in the middle of the biggest city in South Africa. And you're so far removed from the hecticness of Hillbrow, the tranquility of Houghton, and also its own special hustle in Killarney. It was largely down to a guy called James Delaney, who decided to turn his back on the prophets of doom and do something about it. And that's really the thrust of this book, is Joburgers need to stop moaning and start doing.
Well, you make the point, the green shoots of this people-led revival are already beginning to take shape. As you say, all sectors of Johannesburg society are rolling up their sleeves to revitalize and rebirth a large part of the inner city in the face of the terrible news that we hear all the time. Of course, the bigger challenge, Nick, is to get more people to roll up their sleeves. Often, Johannesburgers tend to retreat behind their high walls, those people that could make a real difference.
Yeah, I mean, there's another thing that I argue for in this book, is that we need to shatter the silos, you know, and I use crime as a very good example. It's horrific, really, when we think about it, that to beat the game of crime, you just try and make yourself more secure than your neighbor. You know, let me build a higher wall. Let me get a little bit more electric fencing, or gosh, there was that armed robbery up the road from me. Should I look into getting my gun license? It's about keeping myself, my immediate family safe. And there's nothing wrong with that, Jeremy. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think that Joburgers are in many ways like links of a chain. We're only as strong as the weakest link there. And if we don't start taking an interest in what's happening in our corner of Johannesburg, we are going to very much become products of the situation instead of the situation becoming products of what we want, really. And, you know, I also draw on my experience not only as a journalist, but also a social impact entrepreneur with Lala and Jer, but also I spent a year as a civil servant in Joburg, as a deputy director of communication in the EISD department, which is a mouthful, but in essence, it's the sexy department that looks after water, electricity, and refuse. And one scourge that is happening in Joburg is the vandalism and theft, industrial theft, really, of our electrical infrastructure. And the way I saw out of that in terms of one route were these civil protection groups that had formed in different regions of Johannesburg that had essentially taken it upon themselves to guard and be aware of the electrical infrastructure in their own neighborhoods. And take responsibility upon themselves to work with police, to work with community policing forums, to work with city power to ensure that it doesn't fall prey to really what's become such an organized industry, really. I think organized crime has really got its grip around infrastructure theft and vandalism in Johannesburg. And that is not going to be pried open unless there is a major collaboration between not only security agencies and also the different entities in Johannesburg, like I mentioned, City Power, JMPD, but also the citizens themselves. You know, one story I can think of in my neighborhood living in Melville, a guy on the WhatsApp group said, yeah, no, look, I walked past a little bit earlier and I saw guys breaking into the substation, but I ran the other way because I was scared. And you can't blame a person for being scared. Don't ask Joburgers to put their life on the line, but be proactive, report those people, be aware about what's happening in your area. And most importantly, try and find the initiatives that are already in existence, because there's Joburgers that are willing to walk shoulder to shoulder with you to turn things around.
Nick, to that point, walking shoulder to shoulder, you also talk about enhancing the walkability in Johannesburg, which is critical, I guess, to not only knowing the area, but knowing your neighbor. Again, a great way to fix things, but people will need convincing, surely.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I'm referring back to the experience that we've had at Lalanje, because you know, we initially wanted to do these tours of Hillbrow in vehicles, but then we thought to ourselves, Jesus, this is going to be an urban safari. People looking through the window at poor, really poverty-stricken people in an area that's fallen to urban decay. Why don't we try and do something on foot? And I mean, if you've grown up in Johannesburg, born in the 80s like I was, you've heard nothing good about Hillbrow. You've heard nothing good about Ponte. You're told this is the place where angels fear to tread. But the moment you set foot on the street there, and as a Joburger, always being aware, always being open to the fact that danger may be lurking around the corner, and don't wander off on your own away, isolated from a group, a lot of the danger really melts away. And that begins by knowing our surroundings and being accustomed to them. And I think that walking is really one of the easiest ways to find the heartbeat of a city. I mean, we're living proof, right? I mean, it's not to say that there aren't problems in Hillbrow where we do these tours with Lalanje, but, you know, a lot of the perceived danger is just that. And a lot of the actual real danger melts away if you are confident about where you are, what you're doing, what you're seeking to do. You know, why are you jumping in the car to drive 500 meters to buy a chocolate at the petrol station? Why don't you just speak to your neighbor next door and go for a little trot up the road and catch up on what's happening on your street, or grab your dog, put them on a leash, and walk there and back? I mean, look, I understand that there is a lot of fear around being mugged. There's a lot of fear around what has become a slang term on the street, takeaway, people being attacked and robbed by roaming vehicles. Mm. But we don't begin to change those things, Jeremy, if we just completely succumb to the fear. And I know this sounds a little bit cliched, right? But we're not going to solve the problems of Johannesburg by building bigger walls and isolating ourselves. We're going to solve the problems of Johannesburg's most pressing issues by building longer tables, by tackling them head on, and most critically, trying to engage with Joburgers around us to craft the solutions amongst ourselves.
And Nick, part of that cohort is the informal sector. You say beyond embracing the character of Johannesburg, we need to grasp the opportunity staring the city in the face. That would be the informal sector. You suggest that a lot of progress could be made in terms of the fix if the sector becomes more formalized. How do you go about doing that?
Well, you know, I'd like to tackle the informal sector question alongside xenophobia, because Johannesburg is really a city of migrants, and it's become an absolute groundswell of xenophobia now as well. Every couple of years, we see bloodshed, we see looting, we see millions upon billions of rands of damage to property, where people rise up against what they deem to be a threat to their livelihoods, threat to their future. And I try and explain to the, you know, in the book, track this journey from, a groundswell of migration into a melting pot that's really exploding into xenophobia. And I think that the solution to that is to accept it for what it is. You know, Johannesburg is going to be this lightning rod of attraction for people searching for a better tomorrow, not only for those of us that come from South Africa, other corners of the country, but indeed other corners of the continent and other corners of the world. And I think that we begin to draw the benefits from that perceived challenge, that perceived problem, by first of all accepting it and also trying to harness it. You harness that by trying to formalize the informal. And this is when I'll bring in the informal sector. The informal sector, there's various studies that show it's worth anything from 8% to 15% of the overall GDP in Johannesburg. And a lot of that informal sector is falling through the cracks in terms of not being registered to, never mind, you know, operate as a business, but also indeed pay some form of tax and enjoy the services and enjoy also the protection that comes with having a registered business. And I think that we do this, you know, we kill two birds with one stone by saying, okay, you want to be legally in the country. Let's try and fast track your path to legality, to regularizing your stay as a foreign national. That starts with you agreeing, if you own a business, to have it registered, to have it registered for tax. You know what we'll even do? We'll look at properties that are owned by the city, that are owned by entities of government, and try and turn them into entrepreneurial hubs. We'll give you a rates holiday. We'll give you free services for a certain amount of time, with the incentive that you perhaps invest your time in training people, employing locals, employing South Africans. But then your reward for that will be a path to regularizing your stay in South Africa and enjoying services like education and health without the friction that xenophobia brings, saying that Zimbabweans, Nigerians, Kenyans, Pakistanis, wherever the people are coming from, are stealing services from hardworking South Africans. Because studies show time and time again, Jeremy, that the informal sector is not going anywhere in Johannesburg. It's a vital cog in the economic makeup of the city. And of course, also economic migrants. Studies also shows time and time again that they are more likely to open up a business, to be responsible for economic growth and also job creation, regardless of where they are.
And your argument, Nick, is predicated on decent, empathetic, successful leadership. And you go on to say that merely relying on the officials elected to govern Johannesburg won't cut it anymore. The trouble is a lot of those leaders are either in it for themselves or have simply given up and gone elsewhere.
Yeah, that's also something that really shocked me after my stint in local government in 2022. After this election, really a lot of the talent across the board, and I'm not only talking about opposition parties now in Johannesburg, the likes of Action SA and Democratic Alliance, but also the ANC and even to a lesser extent the EFF and the PA. There are very talented individuals that have become so stifled with the politics of local governance in Johannesburg that they have, you know, packed up their things and left. And I think that as a Joburger, to put your faith in the people that claim to lead us and thinking that your only civic duty from a governance point of view is lining up in a queue every couple of years to vote, if you think that that's enough, I hate to be the person to break it to you. It's the bare minimum. And if you want to see better tomorrow in Johannesburg being aided by the government in the city, we need to start holding these elected officials accountable. And in the book, I mean, I go into the politics of spectacle because we've had these mayoral musical chairs with so many mayors over a short period of time. You know, you have governments coming in trying to make an impact, even if it does mean that it's completely fake. You know, there's no impact over a course of a couple of weeks. Governance, when done properly, is long, drawn out. It's unsexy, Jeremy. It's really boring at the end of the day. But it's ably assisted by citizens that don't just moan about politicians not doing their job, but keep the politicians on their toes. And I use a very simple example, all right? People may know who their local councillor is, but the services that get delivered to various communities in Johannesburg, it's so easy. The numbers show that those that actively engage with their councillor and work with the councillor to ensure that services are delivered are always going to have better service delivery outcomes. And I'll ask you a simple question. Do you know who your member of parliament is? I know we're talking about Johannesburg, but I think, you know, this local governance keeping our elected officials on their toes needs to bleed out into the provinces and also into a national level. I mean, Jeremy, so few people know who their member of parliament is, who's elected for this specific part of South Africa to govern. And I think that if we start to change that idea, you know, I think it's an unfortunate double-edged sword. We had Nelson Mandela come along, one man in a century type of thing, you know, saved us from ourselves, but kind of lulled us into a false sense of security, thinking that some angel is going to come every single generation and just save us again. South Africa's going to be saved by active citizens. And Joburg provides the best case study for me about doing exactly that.
Just a final question. You ask us, Nick Bauer, to dig deep and imagine a new future. What should Johannesburg look like a decade from now?
I think Johannesburg a decade from now needs to not even reinvent itself, rediscover itself as a focal point of entrepreneurship and innovation and industry. You know, it's going to take very, very out-of-the-box thinking. And a lot of the ideas are already on the table, right? You know, the Department of Mineral Resources did a white paper on informal mining, zama-zamas. Estimations are there's anything up to 80,000 plying their trade below the surface here in Johannesburg. And, I mean, we can try and fantasize about heavy-handed policing and bringing in the army. With the price of gold, with the level of unemployment in South Africa, informal mining is not going away. Don't we think a more progressive solution would be to issue informal artisanal mining licenses to the zama-zamas? And then ring-fencing the funds that come in from those informal mining licenses to try and formalize the industry, try and get the informal miners that are taking what little gold is left out of the ground in Johannesburg, make the conditions that they work in a lot safer. And of course, also try and ring-fence a bit of those funds to try and solve the environmental degradation that comes from 140 years of mining. You know, there's heavy traces of uranium, lead, all sorts of things in the mining dumps around Johannesburg, rather. This type of out-of-the-box thinking, Jeremy, I think is going to be critical. And I think it's possible. I'll leave you with this thought. Josie My Josie is an initiative that's being spearheaded by businesses, organizations, NGOs, and the public sector, right? And it stems from the fact that Anglo American was going to abandon the inner city. They were essentially, after over a century of mining, they were going to leave this crater of their head offices and move to Rosebank, which makes sense. A lot of corporates are doing it already, right? But brave entrepreneurs, led by the likes of Robbie Brosen, co-founder of Nando's, went to Anglo and said, "Don't you dare. Don't leave. Like, what message are you sending after creating a city out of absolutely nothing, being one of the companies that had been there from the start? You're just going to tuck tail and run when things are going to get tough." So it forced a bit of thinking out of the box that I'm speaking about. And those offices are now becoming exactly what I'm talking about, you know, a hub of innovation and entrepreneurship. There's an NGO that does a sort of, how do I put it, a streets MBA, you know, it teaches very practical entrepreneurship skills. And they've taken up residence in the old Anglo-American offices. And you watch over the next couple of years, that Marshalltown area where Anglo-American has their offices, what's going to happen there is that you're going to see the green shoots that we spoke about earlier turning into an ivy of innovation and entrepreneurship that I think can easily spread out to the rest of the inner city. And it's stories like that, Jeremy, you know, if we just start linking the thinking of Joburgers, envisioning a better tomorrow where we work together and not try and sustain our own corner of Johannesburg by ourselves, but rather try and walk shoulder to shoulder with other Joburgers to turn things around. Because the gold is gone. The true resource now is the people. And Joburg's not going to save itself, Jeremy. But by God, the people might just.
The book is called Great Johannesburg, What Happened? How to Save an African Economic Giant. The author is Nicholas Bauer. The publisher is Tafelberg. Nick, thank you so much for being my guest on this edition of Fix SA on MoneyWeb.
Thanks for listening to this Fix SA podcast. For more episodes posted every second Friday, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.